Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Today we're diving into a really fascinating short novel that packs a huge punch, philosophically speaking, Sayaka Murata's convenience store woman, Konbini-ningen in Japan. Murata is, well, she's maybe one of the most provocative voices out there in contemporary Japanese literature, especially when she tackles social nonconformity. She has this way of using unsettling logic and quite dark humor to really pick apart what society expects from us.
Yeah, and what makes this book feel so incredibly real, almost hyper-realistic, is Murata's own life story. She actually worked part-time in a Japanese convenience store, Konbini, for like 18 years, even long after she became this famous writer.
Wow, 18 years.
Exactly. So she wasn't just observing it, you know? She lived it. She knew those rhythms, the sounds, the smells, and that lets her just infuse this everyday setting with such a deep, tangible detail.
So if you're listening and you pick this because you're interested in how modern literature deals with alienation or that feeling of being crushed by expectations. Murata's perspective is, well, it's essential, isn't it? What we really want to get into today is how she takes this, you know, brightly lit kind of mundane place.
Yeah, the Konbini.
And turns it into this profound exploration of identity, of purpose. The big question really is, what happens when the role everyone thinks you should play just fundamentally clashes with the only way you found to feel? Well, at peace.
Okay, so to get at that conflict, we absolutely have to start with the main character, Keiko Furukura. She's 36, and she's basically found her entire reason for being inside the Smile Mart convenience store. She's worked at that same store for almost 2 decades.
18 years.
18 years. But Keiko, she was always different from childhood.
Right, and Murata really doesn't hold back showing us how different her way of thinking as a kid. It's startlingly logical, but in this way that feels almost alien to everyone else. There are these stories like suggest that they cook and eat a dead bird they found in the park because, well, waste not, want not, right? Or that really disturbing one where she tries to quiet a crying baby with a small shovel.
It's chilling, actually.
It is. And her family, her teachers, they were just horrified. They saw her as someone who wasn't just quirky, but fundamentally broken, someone needing to be, you know, fixed.
And Murata's writing style here, that really deadpan, detached first-person voice, it's so brilliant. Keiko tells us these, frankly, alarming stories about her childhood completely flatly. No emotion, no judgment.
Yeah.
It makes her internal world feel completely ordered and logical to her, even while her actions seem totally bizarre or even dangerous to everyone around her.
Mm-hmm.
But then she finds the Konbini, and somehow that chaos just settles.
It really does. It becomes this, like, anchor for her.
Yeah.
The store literally gives her a manual for how to be a person. She doesn't need to figure out who to be or how to act.
She just follows the rules.
Exactly. The Smile Mart Handbook is her guide.
Yeah.
And she finds this incredible, almost meditative calm in all the little sensory details that crisp irashimase greeting everyone gets. The constant beeping of the scanner, making sure the hot foods are at the exact right temperature. It all just makes sense to her.
And she finds real meaning there, not in climbing some corporate ladder or getting a promotion, but just in being a perfect part of the machine, a perfectly functioning cog.
It's like that quote, isn't it? Where she says, I had been reborn as a convenience store worker, and that's what I remained.
Yeah.
That idea of rebirth into this role.
Yeah.
It's so radical, especially today when we're all kind of obsessed with dynamic careers and always moving up. For Keiko, the job isn't just a job.
Yeah.
It is the destination. It's her purpose.
But of course, that internal sense of peace she finds, it's constantly bumping up against the outside world, all that pressure.
Oh, relentless pressure. Especially, you know, in a society like Japan's, where a woman hitting her late 30s, the expectation is pretty clear, isn't it? Marriage, kids, a proper career path.
Definitely. And that pressure isn't abstract. It's like this constant background noise. Her sister, Miho, is a big part of that. She and Keiko's old friends, they just keep questioning her choices.
Why aren't you married? Why no kids? Why this job?
To them, she's just failing. She's stuck in this low-wage, dead-end service job. They literally cannot imagine that she could be genuinely happy outside of that very narrow prescribed script for life.
Which is exactly why she feels she needs some kind of cover story.
Yeah.
But just before that happens, the catalyst for a lot of her later turmoil arrives, Shiraha.
Ah, Shiraha.
Yeah, he's a new hire, and he's basically Keiko's polar opposite. She's dedicated, functional, loves the system. He's Well, he's cynical, lazy, feels entitled.
And deeply misogynistic, too.
Oh, absolutely. He doesn't last long, right?
Yeah.
He gets fired pretty quickly for being terrible at the job and apparently stalking female customers.
Yeah, he's gone fast.
Yeah.
But his toxic ideas, they kind of linger, don't they? He's this really resentful nonconformist. He hates the whole system, but has zero discipline or drive to actually build anything himself. He just complains.
And he has this whole theory.
Right, that modern society is basically just a Stone Age village, and men are judged only by their ability to hunt, you know, make money, get status. It's pretty bleak.
It is bleak. But what's really interesting is how Shiraha's bitterness, even though Kaiko kind of disguises him and his views, it plants this seed of doubt in her. His constant attacks on conformity make her start seeing herself through society's judgmental eyes. She starts to realize that her perfectly functional, meaningful life is just invisible, or worse, seen as defective by everyone else.
And that leads to this really, well, infamous and bizarre arrangement. Keiko basically makes Shiraha a purely practical offer.
Super pragmatic.
Totally. He's broke, needs a place to stay. She needs a way to shut up all the critics. So she says, okay, move in, pretend to be my boyfriend.
Yeah, he literally moves into her bathtub, right, or hides in a spare room.
Yeah, he lives like vermin, basically. And in return, she gets this shield, this appearance of normalcy.
It's just such a grotesque parody of a relationship, isn't it? It's completely transactional. No affection, just mutual social convenience. It really shows how desperate Kaiko is to just get people off her back, even if it means betraying her own sense of self.
Well, initially, it kind of works, right? Her sister, her friends, they're relieved. Oh, Kaiko's finally normal. But living with Shiraha, hearing his constant negativity, it starts to eat away at her.
He just keeps hammering away about how society sees things, how her job is worthless because it doesn't have status.
And she starts to internalize it. That maybe they are right. Maybe her life is meaningless by their standards.
The stakes get really high here, emotionally. She gets so desperate for that social piece, for the questions to just stop, that she does the unthinkable. She actually quits.
Quits the Smile Mart after 18 years.
Yeah. She quits her beloved store and tries to actually become conventional. She even goes for interviews for, like, a standard office job, trying to swap her real functional self for something acceptable.
Oh, that part of the book is just heartbreaking. Because without the store, without the uniform, the routines, that constant hum of the konbini, Keiko is completely lost.
Utterly adrift.
You feel this profound, almost existential emptiness in her. The silence where the door chimes and the arashamase used to be, it leaves her totally disconnected from herself. She really did trade her purpose for just pretending.
But then, Imarada gives us this absolutely brilliant moment of clarity. Keiko's walking to her second interview, I think, and she's drawn towards the sounds of another convenience store nearby. It's a bit chaotic. Things aren't quite right.
Yeah, something's slightly off. A display is messy or something.
And those sounds, the scanner beeping, the need to fix something to restore order, they just call out to her. It's like a homing beacon.
And boom, epiphany. She has this sudden, crystal clear realization that her essence, her true self, is completely bound up with that role she tried to abandon.
It's not just that she wants the job back. It's more fundamental. She says, I am a convenience store woman. I am not a person, but this creature.
Wow.
She understands that the konbini isn't a prison. For her, it's the perfect ecosystem. It's where her specific, unique way of being actually works, and works perfectly.
And that leads straight to the resolution, which feels so radical in its own quiet way. She literally walks away from the interview path, right?
Yep. Turns her back on it.
Yeah.
And she decisively cuts ties with Shiraha, who is just utterly appalled. He can't believe she'd choose a low-status service job over a real office job.
He just doesn't get it at all.
Not at all. And she resolves to go back to convenience store work. It's not giving up. It's this incredibly powerful act of self-acceptance. It's her defending her right to exist exactly as she is.
So pulling back from the plot now, what are the really big themes Murata's exploring here? I mean, the critique of conformity feels central.
Absolutely central. The irony is just stinging, isn't it? That Kaiko's attempt to become normal was actually the most abnormal, the most destructive thing she could do because it meant betraying who she fundamentally was.
Yeah, and that cuts especially deep when you think about Japanese society, maybe, but it's universal too. Those rigid boxes for what counts as success, career, marriage, kids, especially for women, lives that don't fit that mold are just seen as less valuable.
Which connects right into that other huge theme. What is work actually worth? Murata just takes apart that whole hierarchy where service work is always seen as less important, less meaningful than, say, an office job.
Keiko finds incredible dignity and purpose in her skill, right? Getting the temperatures just right, arranging the shelves perfectly, performing that specific kind of mandated friendliness.
Exactly. It proves that a job's value isn't just about the salary or the prestige. It's about the meaning it holds for the person doing it. She's a master craftsman of the Gombini.
And the way Murata writes it, that first person, the totally deadpan voice, it pulls you so deep into Keiko's worldview that suddenly the normal world starts to look really strange. Illogical, even.
Yeah, they seem like the weird ones, desperately trying to fit into these uncomfortable boxes.
And the symbolism reinforces it all so well. The convenience store isn't just a setting. It's this little pocket of perfect order, a sanctuary, almost a model society for Keiko.
And the uniform.
Yeah.
It's like her true skin. When she puts it on, she can shed that awkward Keiko the person identity and just be Keiko the efficient convenience store worker. It's functional. It works.
So the novel really forces you to ask, what does success even mean? And how much of ourselves are we willing to give up just to look like we're living the right kind of life according to others? It leaves you wondering, is Keiko truly free now? Or has she just found a cage that happens to fit her perfectly? That little bit of ambiguity is part of its power, I think.
I think the liberation here is just that radical act of defining success entirely on your own terms,
yeah.
Completely separate from the scripts society tries to force on you.
Yeah.
And then having the sheer courage to actually live that truth.
Yeah, maybe the biggest freedom isn't always about changing who you are, but about fully accepting the unique shape you already have and then just executing it perfectly, living it authentically.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.